working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down,
working
in a coal mine,
whoop,
about to slip down.
It's from 1966, Lee Dorsey, working in a coal mine. 92.1 WGHN, Grand Haven's favorite. In the WGHN studios, Ken Forms. How do you like our new studios? Hang on. Okay, hang on. I do this all the time. You love it, don't you?
I do. I can smell the fresh paint.
Well, it's...
And that's what I used to do, right, in the summers?
Yeah.
I know. It's great.
The studio's just... I feel like it's a little bit more intimate. We just kind of moved down the hall, and we're sharing a suite, and the suite looks fantastic. But, you know, we're still providing a service to the audience, and you're here to talk about the coal tipple. Now, there was a celebration last night. How did that go?
It was great. It was okay. Packed.
It was packed. Okay.
It's an annual event that the museum does. We tagged along because the coal tipple is 100 years old this year, part of the Grand Haven Railroad history. And if I give you a thumbnail, a Reader's Digest version, if Grand Haven in 1880s, the lumbering industry ceased to be. And then right outside your window, the harbor was busy with fishing and transportation of people and goods. And then in 1958... the railroad part of our history came to a screeching halt. The last four tickets were sold, two to Coopersville and two to Grand Rapids.
Wow.
And 1958, it's over. So what made this town the way it is? Okay. We always say that we are who we are today because of who they were.
Yes.
So go ahead and run the gamut. Is it the Dave Seibold? Is it the Bill Creason? And when you mention names, you get yourself in trouble. But, you know, right outside One South Harbor, the Brass River and the Sundial, that's an Al Jacobson who in 1985, 1 year after the boardwalk was dedicated, he donated all of that. He did that at the Brass Foundry.
Very cool.
So those people, those founding fathers, make us who we are today.
Right.
And that's the point.
So how do you get a younger generation excited about the past? How?
You can't preach. All you can do is model.
Okay.
And that's what we did as teachers. We modeled good behavior. We modeled being polite, courteous. Mm-hmm. We modeled thinking about things bigger than we were. And that's involvement in the community.
It is.
So I had people like Dave Claussen, Larry Deachin, former city manager, Jerry Witherell, people who got me started. And I thought I was a great salesman back in the 80s for the boardwalk. But you know what? These guys, they greased the runway. And they set me up with people. So I couldn't fail. Lynn Sherwood was a master at that.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. And she said, I have my eye on you. Don't worry about it. I will not let you fail. Like, how do you not like that?
Yeah.
So you go forward, and there are a lot of people. It's dangerous to say names. But I don't know how you get people to do it. It's a value system that you create.
Mm-hmm.
We used to pick up trash in Duncan Woods when I taught at Mary White on Friday afternoons. So everybody's got to have 10 pieces of scrap. So guess what? We had one kid who found a big piece of paper. He ripped it into 10 pieces. He was done. Now he could play.
For crying
so
out
you
loud.
Can't, you, yeah. You think you have the best plan? You can't think for people.
No, and you can't force something on people. They have to get excited about it. But, you know, the coal tipple on Harbor Drive, you're raising money. How much have you raised so far? Do you know?
We have six figures.
You do?
And what's going to happen is that money is at the Community Foundation.
Right.
They manage the money. Mm-hmm. It does not go to the budget or any of the city. The city controls the fund, but they don't control the interest. They don't control any of the financial parts. But the beauty for me as a fundraiser is that the checks go there. I don't touch the money. Number two, they send tax information. Number three, they put it in an envelope with a thank you note.
That's
and they
nice.
Put a stamp on it. I'm done. So I fundraise, period. And that gives us legs when the Community Foundation's involved.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
That's solid, no doubt about it.
What kind of repairs does it need?
Well, there's a process that is called, it's called spalling, S-P-A-L-L-I-N-G, where the concrete falls off that concrete structure. And it happens for the same reason that we have potholes. There are cracks, which they call fissures, in the side of that concrete tipple. And then the moisture gets in, the cold gets in, the snow gets in, and eventually the spalling falls to the ground. So this fall, we will be doing the second treatment. We did it in 2015. There's an epoxy. It's a two-part epoxy latex. Guys are going to go up on a skyjack, 79 feet, right, and do what they'll do is take a wire brush and just clean off the rust from the exposed rod.
Now, who's doing the work?
Well, this year, we got the city employees are going to do it.
Wonderful. Okay. Yeah, the city's involved.
The skyjack alone is $5,000.
I believe it.
You know, and yeah. But anyway, you go up. After the wire brush cleans it off, you apply this epoxy, mm-hmm. and it seals it. We did it in 2015. That is what's recommended by the federal government, by the National Park Services. The product, we're following their direction. It'll last 10 years, and then it needs to be done again. Now, that's between a difference between preservation and restoration. Restoration would be to fill those gaps in with new concrete, and then we'd have a structure that looks like a leopard.
Ah,
and that's not what we want.
No.
Because we are on the National Registry.
Yes.
As a historic site.
And it's the only tipple in Michigan.
There's three.
There's three?
Yeah.
Ours on the State Historic Preservation Office verified that the tipple is the only one in Michigan that the public can readily access. Okay,
yes.
Got it. Okay.
The other tipple mimics ours,
mm-hmm.
is in Durand,
okay.
over by Flint, off
I-69. I know where that is, yeah.
In the middle of a field.
Really?
And the joke is the snowmobilers use that as a sight line to go to the tavern and have pizza and beer. And then they keep it on their right side on the way
okay.
home. So nobody can access that one.
I gotcha.
Then there's
okay.
a third tipple in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
in Lansing. It's
okay.
a different design. But here's the deal. These tipples are not going to fall over. They're not going to tip.
Right.
They are designed by the federal government, who did an experiment in 1920 on the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean where they did water retention walls.
Mm-hmm.
And we know from the boardwalk that anytime there's a battle with water, the water wins.
Yeah.
So they did a five-year test of those, and they held up with this concept of putting rod and steel in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have. Then they said, this is how we will build tipples, because they're going to last. And the thing that really matters is that only the most prosperous railroads had coal tipples
okay.
to afford them.
Interesting.
And if you can imagine, at the end of Washington Street,
mm-hmm.
where the depot is, there were what they called turnabouts, and the engines would come with the front ends facing south,
okay.
and these turnabouts would just rotate them 180 degrees. There would be 8 trains a day coming in.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a busy. That's why we have a tipple, is because it's busy, busy.
So I love this. Moving towards the future, you guys want to get a kiosk out there with informational displays and voice recordings that will reach visitors about the era of the steam locomotives and railroading in the community. I love that.
That's a dream list.
I know it is.
Part of what we're raising money for now is to have a story walk beginning outside your door at the museum.
Okay.
Because that museum and the coal tipple are the only two remaining things from our railroading history.
Wonderful. Wow.
And so that depot was going to get knocked over in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Seibold and Tad Poole from the Tribune, they took an ad out in the paper and explained it to the community, said, sign this, we'll get it to City Hall. Anyway, it's obviously still here.
Mm-hmm.
But the thinking back in 1971 is knock it over so we could put more bleachers in the back of the old waterfront stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Lynn Sherwood, but the old one.
The old one, right.
So that obviously didn't play out. So now it's time to buy that from the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the price of $67,500. The same response from the city, we don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that for the boardwalk. I heard that for the musical fountain. I heard that for the lighthouse. And so part of our reason for doing this tipple is that we're going to do an old-fashioned thing. We're going to have a savings account so
okay.
that when the needs present themselves, we have money to go. That's how we put the boardwalk back together last summer. We used 09 money.
Right.
And then we paid back ourselves so that we could just go full speed ahead and get the project done.
Well, I have to say, I love this handout for the coal tipple. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. And I just want to read something because I got to wrap this up. I got to play one more song for you.
Yes.
From William Morris. Old buildings do not belong to us only. They belong to our forefathers, and they also belong to our descendants, unless we play them false. They are not, in any sense, our own property to do as we like with them. We are only trustees for those that have come after us. William Morris. Well said.
Is that a good?
Yeah, and if anybody can get anything done in this town, it's you, Ken Formsma.
You know what? That's what everybody tells me, but you know what the deal is? I'm getting twice what I got last year.
Yeah.
So what's 2 times 0, Mary Ellen?
0.
Thank you. But you know what? I love it. I'd love it or I wouldn't do it.
I know.
Okay.
I just want to see.
I am so glad to be here.
Well, I just think, it, you know, there's a lot of young families, and we got to get them excited about the history of Grand Haven. Because a lot of times when you look at these, when you look at the fundraisers or the different things that are going on in town, the majority of the people that are there are over the age of 45, 50. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are opening their checkbooks. And I just think we have to find a way to get the younger families in town excited about the history of Grand Haven.
There were a lot of young families.
There were.
Last night.
It's good to hear.
The kids could go up a stairway and get inside the 1223.
No way.
Yep.
I bet they loved it.
And they look so teeny next to that.
Oh, I bet.
And then there were games out in the green space.
Nice. Okay, cool.
And it was just it was a community get-together.
Yeah.
There was no structure.
That's nice.
Everybody was just being themselves.
I love that. I love that.
And you know what? It's a lot of work. Shandi Poppy.
I love her.
Yeah.
With the DDA. Yep.
Yeah. And she and Erica Layton from the museum are going to be doing this story walk. But we have to wait until Chinook Pier gets completed because we don't want to be in their way and have our stuff. But we can visualize people, families walking down, reading tidbits. Like, here's one to leave you with.
Okay.
Our engine, our locomotive, is called the 1223. It has one and only one sister that still survives, and it was the 1225, the locomotive in the Polar Express. Ours does not have an engine in it. Ours has a cracked firewall. That's why it was taken out of service. The Polar Express 1225 is still functioning in the summer.
Amazing.
1941 for $90,000. Today it's over $2 million when you translate the money.
Yeah.
But they're the only two.
Wow.
So not only do we have a relic in that locomotive, the coal tipple is 100 years old, and if you appreciate it, you appreciate it. So thank you for letting me come.
Yeah, I want you in every month.
You got to bring donuts.
Okay. Here's your song, Under the Boardwalk.
Oh, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, The Drifters, 92.1 WGHN, Grand Haven's favorite.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar.